From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of February, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel at agmarket.net. Federal legislation has been introduced that would ban the ownership of farmland by some foreign nations. We'll hear more about that. And we'll talk about the weather forecast, too, with Mark Russo at Everstream Analytics. And Frayne Olson from North Dakota State University will be by with his thoughts on the commodity markets, all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Oh, and I'll remind you to pick up your tickets for the All Day Ag Outlook. It's Tuesday, the 7th day of March. The cost is just $30 at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today at $6.85, 4.5 higher. The May up 4 at $6.82 and a quarter. In December, the new crop at $5.96 and 3/4, 3/4 of a cent higher. Bean meal, rather soybeans at $15.42 and 3/4, up 1/4 cent. In the March, the May up 2.5 at $15.36 and November at $13.84, 6 cents higher. Now the bean meal up 4 3/4 at $504 in the March. The bean oil for the day at $60.14, 40 cents lower. Wheat futures for the soft red up 6 at $7.92. The hard red 3 1/4 higher at $9.12 1/4. Live cattle futures at $165.10, $1.15 higher. Feeders up 80 cents at $187.20. And lean hogs at $86.35, up $3.25. I am very happy to report Kurt Kimmel at agmarket.net that sign up for the All Day Ag Outlook is moving at a rapid pace. Looking forward to a great day at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on Tuesday, the 7th. Day of March, and really happy that you'll be with us again.
Yeah, I always enjoy the event. It kind of caps off the season of meetings and tours and so forth, and really had a great opportunity to visit Faraby in person and looking for some favorable weather. Sometimes the weather could be a little challenge, but man, the way this forecast is shaping up in here, hopefully the trend will continue.
I hope so. We'll see. We'll keep track of that with the meteorologist. Let's talk about what happened in Chicago, the CME group today. I made note that they're still lagging behind a little bit in harvest and planting, depending on which crop you're talking about, soybeans or corn in Brazil. That had some impact, but I guess that's mostly about the comparison to last year than more than anything else.
Yeah, when you compare it to a year ago, we were ahead a year ago. And when you compare it to average, we are seeing a little bit of a lag there. We're seeing reports of 17-18% complete harvest of Brazilian beans, and that's pretty close to average there. So we'll see how that continues. Brazil's supposed to have a little better forecast and a little drier there, so the harvest can continue and logistics could firm up a little bit. And then, of course, Argentina. They're a little later, of course, and they receive some moisture over the weekend, some more moisture to come in through here, and we'll continue to see the market react to how big or how small that Argentina crop is. But early yields seem fairly good. They're on track for Brazil to have another record crop, and that will kind of offset the Argentine. You know, how fast, how soon? There's talk this 2 million metric tons has already made it to the ports ready to go. So that's going to be watched closely here. If there's any heat cups in here, hopefully the U.S. can see a little business take place. There's talks of some Chinese business. Never did see confirmation. If there's even talk of shipping some beans out of the Gulf or even the Pacific Northwest, which it pencils out better to ship out of the Gulf to Argentina to help maybe give them a little supply to crush here. So there's a lot of news floating around, a lot of moving parts, even, you know, more concerns whether or not these balloons are going or UFOs are going to amount to anything. And if we're going to be invaded aliens, the social media went wild over the weekend on whether aliens or bullish or bearish beans.
I wonder if they came to any conclusion. Let's see. One final thing. Carrying charges, interest rates in particular for corn and or beans. How should producers think about them?
Well, producers are pretty well where they want to be. A lot of the grain that's moved is elevator owned just because there is no carry and the risk of holding it that does not just pencil out. So there's been a lot of commercial movement in through here. Producers are going to hang on. And commercials kind of on the other side of the end users wanting to kind of buy a little bit, because once the producer starts go to the field, it's going to be a little challenge to shake it loose in through here, particularly when they get busy with the weather the way it is. There's not been a whole lot of interest in getting some equipment ready to go on that. But when you kind of look at where we're at, why risk the downside? We've encouraged you guys to bump some sales up in through here. We don't want to clean everything out completely, but may hang on a little bit. We like defending $7 in the corn. There's nothing worse than selling your crop and see it go above $7, but you can be on board here if it goes above $7. And same thing on the beans. Move the beans and do a little bit of a replacement here in case beans do move above $16 here. Down the road, but basis is fairly strong, cash price is good, and we're a little concerned the way these world events are unfolding that the risk could be down to the downside here, particularly if U.S.-Chinese relations kind of deteriorate here over the things in the news.
Hey, thanks much.
You bet. Take care, Todd.
You too. Kirk Kimmel is with AgMarket.net and will join us for the All Day Ag Outlook. You can too, Tuesday the 7th day of March. Register at willag.org. Just one quick news item for the day. Yesterday, during Face the Nation on CBS, Senator John Tester of Montana joined Margaret Brennan, and at the end of the conversation, she asked him about a bill that would ban farmland purchases by people from China, North Korea, Russia, and Iran.
I think it's a reasonable step to take. Senator Rounds out of South Dakota does too, so it's bipartisan. And I think we should do it as a matter of course. And I'm all about private property rights. I think people ought to be able to sell who they want to sell to, but not in this particular case because China wants to do bad things to us. Same thing with North Korea, Russia, and Iran. So let's take that off the table, both in farmland and in agribusinesses. I think it'd be a mistake. Really a mistake for national security and for food security.
That was U.S. Senator and farmer John Tester from Montana speaking to Margaret Brennan on yesterday's Face the Nation program. He has put forth legislation, a bill that would ban the purchase of U.S. farmland by those hailing from four nations, Iran, China, Russia, and North Korea. At the end of that conversation, he also suggested he was very concerned about agribusinesses in the United States being owned by companies in those nations. Smithfield Foods is owned by a Chinese company, as is Syngenta. We're now joined by Frayne Olson from NDSU, North Dakota State University in Fargo. Thank you very much, Frayne, for being with us. You're an agricultural economist there. Talk a great deal with the farmers in the northwestern part of the Corn Belt about marketing grain. I'm wondering this winter what they've asked you and what kinds of guidance you've been able to give them.
We've got two kind of separate issues going on. Obviously, number one is old crop and how to try and manage the old crop inventories and sales. And then obviously the other half is the new crop, how aggressively you try and get into the new crop pricing and forward looking. And obviously those two are kind of interconnected, but they are looking at really marketing two different crops. And obviously the difference between those is what do we think the planting intentions are going to be and the yield potential in particular coming out of the 2023 production. Again, there's this interaction that goes on between old crop and new crop, but they do have different dynamics. And we're seeing some of that in particular in the soybean markets. The pricing paths that we're seeing for old crop soybeans are taking a little bit different than they are for new crop soybeans. And a lot of that has been because of some of the fairly strong export sales we've had so far in soybeans and the fact that we're on some pretty tight inventory levels now, at least forecast for the ending stocks coming into the 2023 harvest. So corn and soybeans are taking slightly different paths. Most common question I'm getting, at least up here, farmers have gotten into the routine of selling the soybeans first because of the export demand out of China. Knowing that when the Brazilian crop comes online, that usually see a drop in the basis and a softening in the futures market. Soybeans, I think we've got pretty much taken care of. The hard part then is usually you sell the soybeans, you store the corn, you store the wheat. What do we do with old crop corn, old crop wheat? How aggressively to try and sell those? And the challenge we've had, obviously, in corn, old crop corn, has been that our export sales have been a bit slow. They haven't been as aggressive as they have the last couple of years. Part of that is because of China, but part of it is from our other exporting countries being a little bit not worrying about their inventory levels as much as they have in the past. So looking for some spikes, some opportunities. I do think, you know, there are some of those that might be coming, especially as we watch and follow what's going on in Argentina. And again, what their final corn numbers might be. Argentina is a fairly large competitor for us in the global market. But then also as Brazil starts to harvest their soybean and then planting their Safrinha corn crop, you know, what is the planting pace? What is their yield expectations coming out of their second crop corn? So I do think there'll be some opportunities for old crop corn, but they're going to be relatively short-lived. There'd be likely a spike upwards with a quick retracement based on what the new news in the market.
What's the carrying cost for corn at this point? Inflation, interest rates. Of course, if it's in the elevator, you've got a carrying cost month to month as well. And does that cause you to think that old crop corns, again, as you mentioned, need to come on the spike sooner rather than later?
And that is one of the things I have also been talking about. When you look at the carry in the market, so we got two pieces to it. From a storage cost standpoint, you have the potential revenue, which would be either a carry in the futures and or some kind of carry in the basis. And right now, you know, there's essentially no carry in the corn market. And depending upon where you are, there can be a negative carry in the basis portion. So there really isn't a strong incentive right now in the corn market to say, boy, we want you to store corn. The other half of that I'm really wanting pushing farmers, especially in the soybean area, but also in corn, is to do the calculations, to recalculate, given the higher interest costs we're seeing right now, and the fact that the Federal Reserve funds rates are going up, the fact that your operating notes and the interest rate you're going to have on your new operating loans coming into 2023 growing season are going to be much higher. Your cost to carry and the cost side of things, so you got the revenue side, is there an incentive to store, and you have the cost side. Your costs have gone up pretty substantially for the carrying costs just because of interest. Okay, so up here in this region, most loan renewals that we're looking at for 2023 operating loans are probably anywhere from 7 to 8%. There's a range there depending upon your risk as well as what the individual bank is thinking for additional increases in the federal funds rate. But that's a real common range, and that's well above what we saw, you know, 12 months ago. And so when you do a 7.5% or even an 8% carry on $14 or $14.50 soybeans, you know, that turns out to be about 9 cents a bushel a month, which is much higher than I think most farmers have thought about in the past. So what I'm really encouraging farmers up here to do when it comes to storage costs and the economics of storage, if you will, you really need to redo the math and include these higher interest rates that we're experiencing right now, because it does change the math and it will likely change your strategies on how long you hold that grain in the elevator.
In the Eastern Corn Belt, February is a month that producers pay a lot of attention, I think, across the whole of the Corn Belt. Here, where normally it would be 80-85% coverage for at least corn, and maybe that much for soybeans. In terms of crop insurance, producers have 15-20% of the crop that really is open in the marketplace. It's less than that, actually more open in the marketplace in the Northwestern Corn Belt. I think you're usually 70-75% coverage for crop insurance. What are you telling producers to do? Should they actually, in your area, think at these higher prices like last year, consider upping their coverage?
That is a tricky question, mainly because we are still in price discovery for the major crops coming into the 2023 year. February is the month that we do that. And one of the things that has a pretty significant impact, in my opinion, is the volatility number. So if you're looking at a revenue coverage versus a yield coverage, that price volatility number, and a lot of people don't pay attention to that, I do, does have an impact on what the premiums are going to be for the higher coverage levels, right? Because as you get into the higher levels, less of the crop insurance premium is subsidized. You as a farmer pay a larger portion of the premium. And obviously most farmers that I know of, at least up here, have gone to a revenue coverage. And so that volatility number, how not only at what price level are we looking at, but how variable are prices during this time period, has an impact on the total cost. There are some farmers that are looking at the higher coverage levels, are moving from, for example, an optional unit to an enterprise unit to try and reduce the coverage. I know there's also some folks that are looking at SCO coverage as an alternative to try and pick up some additional, price coverage, if you will, over and above the base crop insurance coverage. So there's a lot of different scenarios a person can play. Each farmer is going to be a little bit different on what that plays out to be. Given our levels up here, 75% is the most common. I do know some folks have gone to 80% coverage, but then they moved to an enterprise unit instead of the optional units.
Right, that volatility index is the last thing that comes into play as USDA is following along with the February pricing. Of course, the prices are set on every business day in the month of February. The volatility index, if I remember correctly, is just the last five trading days of the month, and it can be pretty wild and makes a big difference. It's a multiplier effect.
It's a multiplier effect. It is, yes.
Anything else that we ought to take up for the day, do you think?
The other thing that I am kind of watching as we move in particular into early March, and it comes back to our the trade and the impact of the war in Russia and Ukraine. So we have this grain corridor that is allowing not only wheat, but also some corn and oilseed, sunflower and sunflower oil to come out of the Black Sea region, being exported into the global market. That agreement that all between the Ukraine, Russia, Turkey, and the United Nations is the original one was for 120 days. They extended it for another 120 days. So on March, I believe it's 16th, is when that next 120 days is going to be up. And so we're going to be hearing some more about renegotiating that grain corridor, what the requirements are going to be. There is a considerable backlog of vessels now trying to both enter and exit the Strait of Istanbul, which is kind of that choke point. It's the strait that allows ships to move out of the Black Sea and into the Mediterranean Sea, and that's where they're being inspected and checked to make sure that there isn't anything funny going on. So those inspections are going on right now, but there is some delays. So that grain movement has been working, but not probably as smoothly as a lot of people were hoping it would work. So that agreement will be renegotiated very, very soon, and that is going to be something politically that we need to watch. I do think there's enough incentives in place for them to renegotiate something, but what the specific terms look like will be open for debate. So there is, I think there's some things coming up now in a few weeks that we need to be paying attention to on the geopolitical side that may also have an impact on grain prices and again, trade flows.
As always, it's insightful. Thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk with you each month, Frank.
Well, I do enjoy it as well. It gives me a chance to think about things in a little bit different way. So I appreciate the opportunity to visit, and it's always a lot of fun on my end as well.
Frank Olson is an agricultural economist at North Dakota State University Extension. Hey, don't forget to register for the all-day Ag Outlook at the Beef House Tuesday, March the 7th. The cost is $30. You know where to go, willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Now let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Mark Russo is here. He's with Everstream Analytics. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Well, February has been really quite warm. In fact, it looks like it's going to stay that way. Can you tell me a little bit about the upcoming forecast?
Yeah, it's been unseasonably warm here this basic first half of Feb, and basically that looks to continue here into the second half of Feb. The next 10 days just continued, you know, well above normal temperature bias. There is going to be this really brief cool down late this week on Friday, but then temperatures quickly rebound for the upcoming weekend. And again, the vast majority of days from now through month's end look to feature above normal temperatures here across the Corn Belt.
That puts us through to the very end of February, the last few days. What does the transition into March look like?
Well, we are watching the potential of at least some colder air moving into sections of the central U.S. Right during the first few days of March. Some debate in regards to that timing and location. Does that cold move further south, you know, heading towards like Texas, or does it start to move eastward and encompass more of the Midwest and Great Lakes region? So it's certainly looking like at least some transition to either more variability or less persistent warmth as we move towards the start of next month.
In South America, how are things progressing in Argentina?
Well, Argentina is getting some rains right now. In fact, this is their best window of opportunity in several weeks. We are still not expecting any kind of widespread all-encompassing event, but we're estimating about 40% of the belt will be receiving significant or meaningful rainfall totals there. So probably enough to stabilize, but again, not enough to turn around the situation, which is obviously not good given the high crop stress this season due to heat and rainfall, lack of rainfall across that area. And again, once this rainfall opportunity is done, then they're going to have 7 days of drier weather, and then a very minor event is projected later next week, but no sign of any turnaround in the pattern that would produce more frequent, meaningful rains there.
Rainfall in center west parts of Brazil has their harvest and planting behind last year. I suppose that's mostly because of dry conditions, but I feel like we probably ought to talk about what those conditions are like.
Yeah, certainly things are running a bit behind last year, but some of that is due to just the overall weather patterns throughout the season and the planting pace. And bottom line here is we don't see any significant issues in terms of harvesting, or for that matter, winter corn planting across center west from now through the end of the month. In general, it's a near normal rainfall pattern. So harvesting isn't going to be totally open, but then it's not going to be bogged down over any areas for a longer period of time. So quite a typical kind of, you know, latter part of the rainy season pattern looking out over the next couple of weeks there, keeping harvest progress generally steady as it's been in the past week or two.
Hey, thanks much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics and joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.